Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com. Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is too mystery for many people, so I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guests today are Haru Zenda of Masa, the famed sushi restaurant with three Michelin stars, and Andy May, who works at the Polynesian, the cool tiki bar by the major food group of Kaboni, ZZ's Clam Bar, Dirty French, and many other popular spots. Haru and Andy are the two winners of the shochu cocktail competition, Spirited Away, which was held in May. The winner's prize was a trip to Kyushu, the southern part of Japan, and the home of shochu production. So in this episode, we discuss why they discovered Kyushu, why shochu is a great ingredient for mixologists like Haru and Andy, how to make a great glass of shochu cocktails, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Eats. Also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or kikotema.com. Now let's start our conversation with Haru Zenda and Andy May. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome. So, happy to be here.
Very exciting. So full disclosure, I was a judge on the competition. I was very, very impressed how well you expressed the shochu. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So tell us your background first. So where are you from and where you grew up? And how did you go into the world of cocktails?
Of course. So I'm Haru, and I'm actually born in New York. And I've been here for the last 14 years now. I've basically loved cooking, loved flavors. So making cocktails was just a natural step along that way.
Right. So a natural step and started working for Michelin 3-star restaurant, which is an amazing step. So in your case, so the Japanese culture is kind of how much of exposure you had to Japanese culture?
Well, so my mother's Japanese and my father's Romanian. So growing up, I did speak a lot of Japanese, and I did spend some time in Kyoto, where my grandmother's originally from.
Wow.
I actually worked in Kyoto in an udon shop of all places. And while I was there, while I was still in school, in fact, I actually learned about sake. Because I was studying both Japanese and chemistry, and it was just a natural crossroad for me to get to.
Right. Wow. Okay, so what about you, Andy?
Hi, I'm Andy May. I was born in New York as well, but grew up in Los Angeles. And kind of how I got into the whole cocktail thing was I was studying music at a music conservatory for 3 years. And afterwards, I was able to transfer to UC Irvine. And a lot of the students would work at Disneyland, and so I was dancing the Disneyland parade, learned the choreography, learned the dance, and then realized that dancing in July heat is probably one of the worst things to do, especially in a reindeer costume. So then I chose, okay, let's go find something else. And so I found a bar in Pasadena, California, and that's when I just asked the guys, I have no experience, I was working at a cafe, where do I start and how do I go from there? And 3 years into it, I went from busboy to the head bartender. Wow. And then from there, moving on to opening up a Japanese restaurant in downtown LA. And then fortuitously finding myself in New York City working at with Brian Miller at the Polynesian.
Right. Wow. Amazing. So, so you are at, respectively, the Masa and the Polynesian. These are really great places in New York. So, so each of you, what style of cocktails do you make there?
So, especially for Masa, because it is a restaurant, I really focus on more food-oriented cocktails. And while not, necessary, we do like to put a Japanese spin or use Japanese ingredients, so Japanese whiskey, Japanese sake, even Japanese shochu and gin. So that's sort of the focus that we go for. And then also beverages that go well with food.
So in other words,
don't necessarily overpower the food.
Okay, so you can, if you want, you can drink cocktail with food.
Yes.
Wow, which I think is very hard to achieve, actually, for bartenders.
Well, a lot of it is about balancing. There's certain flavors that you don't necessarily want too much of. Specifically things like sweetness or bitterness, even spiciness to a certain extent. So it's a lot about balancing the flavors to adjust it and also fitting it with the season as well.
Okay. Yeah. So so in other words, you don't have any distinctive one flavor. Everything's kind of harmonized to go with.
I would say definitely yes, balancing it out. I would say things like nice acidity works really well. So a lot of times you end up with some citrusy sort of flavors or have, lemon zest expressed.
Do you have a favorite cocktail on the menu right now?
On the menu right now, actually, one of the cocktails I really like is kind of like a take on a jungle bird.
Oh.
So it's kind of like it's a rum style Negroni, if you will. So you might be thinking it's bitter. And so the way we get around it is we actually add a little bit of yuzu and as well as some creme de violette as well. So it gives it a nice florality as well as a nice bit of acidity in addition to the bitterness. Right. And it becomes like a nice, almost aperitif style cocktail at the same time.
Cool.
Interesting. So, great question, Andy. Thank you. Yeah, so it sounds like if I go to a restaurant, if I really wanted to pair with cocktails, maybe acidity.
Yeah.
Is the key.
Yes. That's why margaritas are almost king when it comes to any sort of restaurant.
Right. Okay, so what about you, Angie?
Can I hear the question again?
Oh, so what's the style of cocktails that you make at the Polynesian?
At the Polynesian, the name kind of gives it away, island-style cocktails, tiki cocktails, a lot of fruit juices, different types of sugars are added to it, but it's mostly a rum-focused menu we have over 150 bottles of rum back there. but yeah, we're more bar focused, and so the food kind of helps sedate the alcohol and just to keep you on your seats without falling over. So a little bit different than Masa. I was able to play with more Japanese ingredients at this other bar that I work at, the Hidden Pearl, which is in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And there we're able to play with umeshu, yuzushu, different Japanese whiskeys, even Japanese rum. That's very fun. And so that really helped me create this cocktail for the Spirited Away competition. Mm. And
right. So I'm curious. So so in your case, kind of the exposure to Japanese ingredients kind of new.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Oh, very much so. Right. I think I first learned about, or first even started tasting Japanese whiskey back in Los Angeles and tasting sake for the first time. And before, my exposure to sake was like, okay, it's either hot or it's cold, but I never really drank it. I was just a Sapporo drinker. But when I was exposed to sake and learning about like Junmais, Daiginjos, and all this, like what sake can bring to the palate, and then even to cocktails, though I don't really like playing with sake with cocktails, shochu was the easiest way into it, because it's distilled, it's able to withstand some other fruit juices and whatnot, and goes great with soda. And so from there, it's just it's all fun and games, and you just get to really mess around with stuff.
Right. So as a talented bartender, Japanese ingredients don't make you feel like it's foreign. You can, it's just like a natural ingredient that you can utilize naturally.
Yeah, it almost feels like it's a different take on your regular flavors that you have. So I kind of think of like umeshu as a style of like grapefruit. Yuzushu as
a basic liqueur, if you will, yeah, like a triple sec. It's kind of an extension of like the library or portfolio that bartenders have behind the bar.
Interesting, right? If you just speak to a umeshu producer, they don't probably think of
that
idea.
They think of them as umeshu rather than as like a product behind the bar.
Right.
So I think whereas a bartender, like our mentality is like looking at it and saying, how can we use this product in a very interesting way? Or like what flavors will go with this?
Right. Fascinating. Yeah. So, so we will talk about the trip, about the trip to Kyushu in a moment. But for listeners who are not familiar with shochu, what is shochu and what are the difference between sake and other, cocktail ingredients?
This is like one of the most trickiest questions that
we
can get.
It's so hard to answer.
It's everything and nothing at the same time. It's hard to define it because it's so enigmatic. We'll start off with the bat. There's over 50 approved ingredients that you can make shochu out of, with the major ones being rice, barley, sweet potato. Mm-hmm. I would say the top three, right?
Yeah, top three for sure. Soba, soba was your shochu.
I wouldn't say soba is a major part of the market, but even you could have short grain rice or long grain rice. You could have sugarcane shochu, so it covers a whole breadth of things, but the one thing that they all share is the koji aspect, the mold. And because of that, it's very similar to at least the fermentation process to sake.
Right. So just to overly simplify it, so sake is distilled, then that's shochu, kind of, basically. Although
that's rice shochu then.
Right. So then the ingredients...
But then
could be anything.
Yeah, so, but if it's made with barley, then it's kind of like whiskey. Mm-hmm. If it's made with,
if it's rice, it's kind of like. If I were to see the bottles all on a back bar and I were to correlate them with specific American spirits, I would think, your kome, your rice is acquiescent to vodkas.
Like a very clean style vodka. What's also interesting about shochu is that it's also usually the quality shochus are only single distilled. And as
honkaku.
Honkaku shochu, that's the single distilled shochu. And what's interesting is that unlike vodkas, it actually retains the flavors of whatever base ingredient was.
Right. So it's like a mezcal and tequila kind of, in a way.
That's where...
I could see the trend of that too, but I think... what is like wearisome for the American bartender would be to just think that like I can turn an old fashioned and add mezcal, and a mezcal old fashioned will be like the next big thing.
Or it's like oh, I can make a mezcal Negroni or a bourbon Negroni, and then it's like it's very interchangeable. Whereas shochu, it's
like
not
emo
as interchangeable.
Shochu, Campari, and sweet vermouth could work,
but it also depends on which emo shochu.
You have to know.
And then kome shochu is much lighter. So it's this broad category that almost has subcategories.
Right.
And then I guess the final important thing about shochu is that it's typically at about 20 to 25% alcohol. And it's actually meant to be diluted when you drink it, especially mizuwari, cutting it with water, or oyuwari, cutting it with hot water.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So compared to like 40 degrees or other, heavier distilled alcohol, it's much lower alcohol.
Much lower. And the fact that the cultural trend in Japan is to actually dilute it before you enjoy it.
Further lowering.
So you're actually probably drinking it at about 10 to 15% alcohol, which is closer to a beer or wine, which is how they drink it in Kyushu.
Mm, right. And actually, if you dilute it, yeah. sometimes the flavor comes out more vividly. Mm-hmm.
Well, especially because it is single distilled, a lot more of the natural oils and flavors remain.
Yeah, they'll really showcase.
Right.
It's like almost adding that drop of water in a whiskey or a scotch. So very similar.
Right. So going back to, you know, how the style of balancing, it's probably easier because alcohol is lower. So it's kind of milder.
Yeah, I would say so. What's a very interesting conversation we had with like some of the producers was they were very interested in like saying like, oh, should our product be 40%? And I was of the mind of like, well, if it has the right flavor, you don't need the alcohol.
Yeah, you don't need all that alcohol heat to make it be an American kind of or to succeed in the American market. I think nowadays you're seeing a lot of like sherry cocktails being on a menu and highballs even too. So I think we're trending now to be less proof or a lower proof.
Yeah, low ABV
is like a big thing. There's even no ABV like bars that are opening up in Brooklyn, which is so Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm. It's in a Greenpoint, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in Greenpoint.
That's very, very Brooklyn now. Yeah. So, interesting. So, as a bartender, you know, if we are given shochu, it's kind of nice thing to find because it's new and it's...
What's interesting is it has so much character to it that you can actually show off the flavors. So, like, for instance, the two shochus that Andy and I used for the competition are completely different. Mm. Like, my shochu was 100% buckwheat, so it was, like, super rich, like, almost like toasted cereal, and didn't taste like any of the other shochus.
Yeah, well, mine was, like, a kuro, so black mold, with sweet potato, and that one was very similar to, like, a rum, like a Jamaican rum, and that's kind of why I chose it for my cocktail, yeah.
Right. Okay, so the competition that you won in the first and second prize, the Spirited Away cocktail competition was conceived by the three companies, and these are New York Mutual Trading Company, and Skernik Wine and Spirits, and Mizu Shochu, and you know Jesse. Well, it's for my guest here. So what was the theme of the competition?
So this was the first shochu-based competition, and I think they primarily wanted to highlight like the versatility of shochus and how many different styles there are. All the shochus that were available were actually from Kyushu itself, especially like because Kyushu is like where the heart of shochu is.
Yeah, unlike most competitions where you're doing a whiskey competition, you're only allotted to use that one whiskey. Right. This was the first shochu competition where we were able to touch on Kome, on Mugi, on Imo shochu, and all different styles of it. And so that's what was like so fun because it was like getting all the leaders of the shochu world to come together and be like, all right, let's see who can make the best cocktail.
Yeah, it's like 25 or something.
It's over 25 like products and like seven producers getting together.
And then we were still very limited because we can only use, I believe, seven ingredients. We couldn't go too crazy in the mixology world and like fat wash this and do all that because they wanted to still preserve the shochu and let that be the shining aspect of each cocktail.
Which you did. So it's very hard, right, to... I mean, there's some seven ingredients. How can you make shochu taste relevant? And you did it.
Yeah, so. Relevant and still tasty and different.
Still tastes like a shochu cocktail before a cocktail.
Right. So, I mean, you know, Andy already described what you made. It's like the Mononoke Colada featuring potato shochu and inspired by a drink from a vending machine on your pasture to Japan.
Yeah, right? I was in Japan. this was before this trip, the year before. And what I loved about Japan, besides like the architecture, the culture, the food, was that for every 12 Japanese citizen, I believe there's one vending machine. And so if there's like 22 million people in Tokyo itself, that means there's like just under 2 million vending machines and not counting all the stuff inside the vending machines. And so you could literally go around and see a new vending machine, throw in a couple coins and like get something new and something you never had before. And so that was basically my breakfast every morning. I would just walk around like, okay, what's this thing? And I saw this tiny like cow with a banana on it. I was like, what in the world is this going to be?
Oh.
And it popped out, and it's like a banana cream soda. I was like, okay, this was fantastic. Mm. It was so, like, it's unlike anything I've ever tasted before.
Mm.
And so that was what inspired me to make the Mononoke Colada. The other ingredients were some coconut cream, a touch of soda water, tiki bitters, a banana blend of 99 bananas and Banana de Brazil, and then the Karoshionami shochu and pineapple and lemon juice as well.
I wish I could try that again. The haru's there was the same as buckwheat.
Yes.
So
I use the toari, which is the 100% buckwheat shochu, and I essentially wanted to make a cocktail that highlighted the buckwheatness. But I didn't want to actually use any citrus, because a lot of times when you start off making a cocktail, especially with shochu, you kind of make like a chuhai or a shochu sour. And so I said no citrus.
Mm.
But you need to bring like that balance. You can't just have one flavor. Mm. So I blended, I mixed it together with some Dolin sweet vermouth, as well as some buckwheat honey, because buckwheat and buckwheat I thought was just a natural like pairing. And then I also used an aged sake called Hanahato.
Mm.
So it has this like rich soy sort of flavor. And the flavor I kind of wanted to bring out was like you're eating soba noodles.
Mm.
And super nice and comforting. And then as the garnish, I used the dehydrated scallion and some nori seaweed. So just rounding out all those lovely umami flavors.
Right. That was very interesting. Yeah. And it kind of like the soba flavors were more than actual soda in a way. Yeah. It's kind of concentrated. So, yeah, again, you should serve it at Masa. You don't.
Not at the moment, no. Maybe in a soba restaurant. if we were a noodle shop back in Kyoto.
Right. All right, so we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about Haru and Nandi's discoveries during their trip to Kyushu. So please stay with us. Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com. Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Atema, and my guests today are Haru Zenda of Masa and Andy May of the Polynesian. So they are the winners of the shochu competition, The Spirited Away, that was held in May. So now we have to toast, because Andy and Haru brought a glass of interesting shochu. So congratulations and welcome back.
Come back.
Come back. So what is this?
So this is a very interesting imo shochu. So it's a sweet potato shochu coming from Miyagi Prefecture.
Miyagi,
yes. Yeah. It's called Flamingo Kagoshima. Orange.
Kagoshima Prefecture, I believe.
This one's from Kagoshima?
I believe so.
Okay.
No,
it is.
Huh. Mm. So the label's amazing. That's really the bright flamingo color, and then that actually this color reminds me of some peachy
or
flavor,
like lychee.
Yeah,
like
lychee,
super
actually.
Tropical,
right?
Like white fruit
it,
for sure.
It tastes like the label, like super colorful.
Right.
So what's interesting about this one is we were actually told that there's so many new techniques happening right now, especially in like shochu making. And lots of producers are experimenting.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting about this one is they actually wet age their sweet potato. So I'm sure you're familiar with like dry aging meats, mm-hmm. just to enhance the flavor.
Right.
So what they said was they put the sweet potato in like a cold, damp room to like simulate that it's still underground.
Still in the ground, right? Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
And then what this does is it enriches like the sweetness as well as like that fruity component of sweet potato and just elevates it.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Wow. And so yeah, funny.
When you play with the different koji in the process of making shochu, you can find that really brings out different flavors as well. When we were in Kuroki Honten, I believe they were using more yellow koji.
They were using the sake style.
Yeah.
So they were using like yellow koji instead of the classic kuro koji.
Right. Interesting. Because I thought lately I had a conversation about sake koji. Oh, the yeast, actually. And there was a flour koji that was used. And I thought there may be some flour yeast in it.
Maybe.
Yeah, but it's amazing.
There's so much experimentation happening in shochu, and I think that's what's also very interesting. So this one's coming from like a smaller producer. So what they're doing is they're experimenting on a much more smaller scale.
Mm.
Whereas if with the bigger producers that we went to, like Sanwa Shurui or even Shiro.
Oh, let's get into that. So so the trip, so you spent a whole week in Kyushu, which is also, of course, the home of shochu production, from September 29th to October 3rd. And you visited 7 distilleries during your trip.
In 5 days.
Yes. A lot of tasting, I'm sure. So the theme of what is your mission to go there?
Taste and drink as much as we can, and we succeeded and accomplished that.
I think what I took away from it is that we got a better understanding of what the product is and who are the people that are making it and who is it meant for.
Right. So,
yeah, what I really took away from that trip was like how people were drinking the shochu, and then where it was really coming from. Because I love the saying like where grows is where it glows, something like that.
If it grows together, it goes together.
Yes, exactly.
So we were able to have like Miyagi beef with Miyagi shochu.
So terroir.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And so it's like whatever we were having, like we had some tori sashimi, some chicken sashimi, especially from Kagoshima, where it's
people
like
freak
super
out
fresh.
In this country, like if they are.
But I mean, if the chicken's that fresh, it's like almost, it's like the white meat is like eating fish, whereas the red meat was like eating beef.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was like crazy how rich it was. And then it went really well with like the meaty dishes, especially the shochu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, chicken sashimi is actually really good when it's good. So, Andy, you mentioned, how to drink was something new. Like, you know, in this country, shochu, probably people even don't know what shochu is. Mm-hmm. Usually,
they'll call it soju, and they'll be like, we get it at the Korean barbecue place in tiny green glasses. Oh. And you're like, not really. But like the problem with that was, I think in the early 70s, to promote shochu, they called it, the Japanese called it soju.
So I believe the issue was that I think California was giving tax breaks, or they were incentivizing it,
like
because the
24% versus 25% alcohol, the tax changes. So Korean people negotiated.
Exactly.
It'd be called belonging
soju.
To. Yeah.
Exactly. So now, as a result, like it was very short-term like thinking on some producers where they would label the bottle as shochu as well as soju.
That's
it. Yeah, and so now like that ramification after 40 years is still happening because people, when they hear a shochu, they think soju. And then they're like, it's that, you know, Korean barbecue stuff. It's like, but this is made with sweet potato. So it's very
educated.
Right. In Japan, there are two classes, Daiko and Otsu. So I don't think there's the same similar classification in soju, the world of soju in Korea. So it is a very distinctive difference in, you know, definition of quality and grading too. So I think this should be shochu and soju.
Mm.
Yeah. So what kind of new way to drink shochu, Andy, did you discover in Kyushu?
In Kyushu, I really learned about, simplicity is really the key. Just let the shochu do its thing. Like with rum, the best way I think to taste rum is to throw it into a daiquiri. You'll really be able to expose it with fresh lime juice and just sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So with shochu, different shochus will be able to showcase their quality through through different ways of drinking it. So personally, I really enjoy anything with soda water or on the rocks. But now that it's getting colder here in New York City, it's so tasty to have an emo shochu with just a little bit of hot water, oyuari. And one of the things we learned from Yanagita-san was to specifically pour the hot water first, 50-50 shochu and hot water, and then the shochu afterwards, so that the hot water will rise while the cold shochu sinks down, so you can let gravity just mix it on its own.
Naturally circulates. Mm-hmm.
Good to know.
So that was just one of the fun things that we would have never learned if we had never gotten this opportunity to go on the trip.
So what's the temperature of the hot water? Like around, it's like not boiling, right?
It's not boiling. I would do it at 175 degrees Fahrenheit. Just because I think that's how I like to steep my tea. And gives it maybe a couple minutes of heat, and so you can let it steep and rest for a little bit and then still be able to enjoy it in
without losing the flavor with the heat. Okay. And let's talk about the distilleries you visited. Are they out of seven, they are all most of them were starting in 1902 or something, 18 yes. something.
So a lot of them are very
I was a
big
baby
houses
when they first started.
or most of them are on their third or fourth generation of the master distiller. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these are very franchised shochus, but some of them are very small. They'll only have 3 to 5 people working the distillery, whereas others will be almost the entire town size.
That's town relies on the company.
Exactly.
So maybe each of you want to pick one or two distilleries that you want to talk about?
Sure.
Yeah.
So I was a big fan of especially Yanagita-san from Miyagi Prefecture. He says that his family was the one that kind of originated the 100% barley shochu. Because the way it works is usually when you inoculate the mold and when you inoculate the yeast, you have to do in separate batches before you combine it. So before his family actually perfected the technique, they actually had to use rice koji. And then as the base would be the barley.
Right.
And then apparently it was an interesting history where some of the parents from, which one was it? Sawashirui?
Sawashirui.
Yeah, stayed over at the Yanagita house and then learned that technique under the initial president. Also, what's very interesting about Yanagita-san is he's kind of a tinkerer, where he actually...
He has a master's in mechanical engineering.
For some reason. And so he tinkers around with his distillation device. So not only can he do distillation atmospheric or, vacuum, but he can do somewhere in between as well. Mm-hmm. So he gets really unique flavors out of his shochus as well.
So it's not iffy. He really analyzes and technically.
Yeah, he spends 3 months just scooping the oil out with a strainer made out of horsehair. between December and February.
At 5 in the morning, because that's when you can see the oil floating on the surface.
Right.
So that was actually very, and this is a very small producer. It's just him and two other people, and then...
Wow.
And it's family owned too. I think most of his staff are all women too, and so he only has a daughter, and so that's the next heir to his Shuzo. So it's going to be great to see just a Shuzo that is just run by women and seeing what that entails for the future of Shoshu as well, because who knows what's going to happen next. It's very exciting.
Right. Okay. So do you have any?
I would say one of my favorites was probably Kagoshima, the Satsuma Shiranami.
The Satsuma Shuzo.
Shuzo, yeah. Yeah.
So Shiranami. So you're sponsoring your product.
Yeah, I'm sponsoring. This is not a paid sponsorship. But no, it was just fantastic because they're right next to the factory that smokes fish.
Oh, yes, Katsuobushi.
Katsuobushi, yeah.
The bonito. Bonito. So apparently Kagoshima is really famous for bonitos, like dry bonitos.
Yeah, when we were driving into the Shuzo, the air just smelled like smoked fish. And you see hawks flying around, and they're just the they're largest, healthiest hawks in the world.
Interesting, wow. So the listeners, so the bonito is like, you know, before you make bonito flakes, it's like the solid.
Yes, it's a brick smoked of bonito fish.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Oh, wow, interesting.
Yeah, so that was really fun.
And then we also got to see like one of the few cooperages. So it's it's a barrel making place because what's interesting about Satsuma Shuzo is that they actually age some of their mugi shochu in American white oak.
American white oak.
Oh, wow.
And it's I think one of three or four cooperages only, and the rest are whiskey based, whereas this is the only shochu cooperage. So it was very interesting to see that, especially.
Well, I was going to ask this question later, but, you know, by aging it, it gets color, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And in Japan, if it's not clear or, like, yellowish, it's going to be allowed to be sold as shochu.
Well, so we were actually talking with Kuroki Honten, from the Kuroki Honten, obviously. But he said that one of the big issues is that there's this antiquated law where if a shochu gets too dark, it has to be labeled as a liqueur, not as a shochu. So it can't even be called aged shochu. And it might not even have any sugars added, but it will have to be labeled as a liqueur.
Mm.
So anything darker than, I would say, a glass of Chardonnay is too dark.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they're actually trying to like reverse this law because it was initially, apparently they told us, it was initially made so that they could tell apart like faulty shochu versus like whiskeys that were getting to be popular at the time the law was invented and didn't have like the technology to like accurately like assess like is this a shochu or is this a whiskey. Like they didn't want any bootlegging going on between, you know, people selling shochus as whiskey or whiskeys as shochu.
So I happened to go to the whiskey fest and I had a conversation with one of the greatest blenders in the world, like me, and we had a conversation about Japanese regulations, and it has to be determined, because I'm gonna have a guest who found. I went to, you know, Kyushu and Kuma area that you visited too, and so I went to one of the distilleries, and there's an old warehouse, and there you are, beautiful dark shochu, delicious, but they can't sell it. So American gentleman went there, discovered, and now he's selling it as whiskey. And I'm going to have him as a guest next year.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah. So it's crazy how all those, you know, treasure buried just for the regulation.
Yeah, just through the laws.
Well, it's, but like the, it, where I see a problem is like, can you call it a whiskey? Because it does still use koji. So that's like the issue where it runs into it, because whiskey doesn't traditionally use koji as like part of the fermentation process. So is it like a new category?
Yeah, and the topic of conversation.
That's why like shochu is like kind of an enigma at times, because it's like, what do you call this?
But interesting that you said. And now like I see beer companies, you know, craft beer companies making beer with koji and whiskey with koji, maybe somewhere like in Kentucky, who knows? So it's kind of crossover going on.
And that's maybe crazy, I'm innovative for sure.
Right. Okay, so, so how do you use what you learned in Kyushu at your bar or whatever?
I think one is just, it's working at the Hidden Pearl, it's a little bit easier because it's a smaller bar. I believe we have 22 seats. So the personal time is much more valued, while at the Polynesian, where we do like 1,100 people on a Friday, Saturday night.
Wow.
And so it's so intense and you're barely able to talk. You're just like, I just need to make you this pina colada. So what we've learned from that is just this. I think the stories and like entertaining a guest with what our experiences are and seeing the, like how, what they can take with that, and then from there it's really fun. I was at Bar Benfitic, and it was towards the end of the night, and so we weren't able to get a seat at the bar, but I asked the head bartender there to make me a shochu cocktail, just to see like what the difference is between a Japanese bartender and an American bartender would make. Mm. And so he used the Ichigo Saiten and just created a last word variation. I was like, all right, this is cool. This is tasty. But it wasn't exactly what I wanted because it didn't showcase the shochu. I really got more of that green chartreuse and the maraschino.
It was a good cocktail.
It was a good cocktail. Shochu,
and, but not a shochu cocktail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so now we have different levels of imbibers and people who care about what they're intaking in the alcohol realm. And so now it's just like, how do I showcase the shochu as like the primary flavor and then tell a story from it?
I think what's really interesting is that because it to the American public, like shochu is a distilled spirit, they treat it as like a whiskey or a vodka. So whereas in Japan, what was very interesting was people were drinking it at home. Like once again, diluting it with either hot water or even just regular water and then having it with a meal, like it was a beer or a glass of wine. And I think because this idea that it is a distilled spirit, I think this cocktail competition was a really excellent idea because having it in a cocktail actually presents it where you can get it to the individual level rather than like someone taking something that they might not be familiar with it straight from the liquor store. They can interact with someone who is knowledgeable about it. And I think what's also great about shochu is there's a shochu for everyone. So there's like so many styles that it's like, oh, you want something weird and funky? Have an emo shochu. Do you want something nice and clean like a vodka? Well, rice shochu is excellent for that. If you like whiskeys, mugi shochu. It can be aged, but it can also have this like super toasted, like almost like burnt corn kernels. And then if you like rum, there's sugarcane shochu. So there's a style for everyone. That's what's great about it.
Right. Interesting. So, yeah, and also I think, you know, like when I was thinking about Andy's, you know, what you're saying, probably, partly that, well, shochu can be the center stage, but can be a supporting role. Oh, it's important, right, in the world of cocktails. So you can just use it in either way. And I happen to get a gift of good plain shochu. It's mugi. And I got the nice flavorful Japanese style gin. And I one day, you know, both are really great, but I didn't feel like any of those. And I just happened to mix them. That was like amazing.
Oh,
So
like a 50-50 martini.
Yeah, kind of. So yeah, it's a definitely shochu doesn't have to be the main ingredient.
No. I think it do a supporting role as well. I think it has so much flavor, like that there's so much room for experimentation. Like anyone who tastes shochu is like, wow, I've never tasted it like this. And it's true. There's a lot of shochus, they don't taste like anything else on the market right now.
Right. And also, some people find it healthier. And I think, me personally, I think shochu is very gentle. Yeah. So I feel great next day.
Yeah. Unlike beer or wine or sake, there's no residual sugar because it's been distilled. And so you're able to have like two or three glasses and one cup of water and you'd be fine. Well, if I had like a glass of or two of Merlot or Cap Franc, I'd have the worst hangover the next day.
Well, also, there's like very little like messing around with it. Like there's not a lot of additives. Like the most they're gonna do is age it in a barrel and then they kind of leave it on its own because they want to showcase the flavors.
I'm sure for intense 5 days I'm sure you did something other than this thing.
A lot of izakayas.
What was really funny from that trip was I would say if there was a specific theme, I would use the word domino, in a sense where every night we each kind of took it upon ourselves to have a lot of fun with shochu, and we got shochu soaked. And so my first night, or our first night actually, in Oita, we found out that the Rugby World Cup was happening at the same time. Whoa. And it was taking place in Kagoshima and throughout Kyushu. And so there's a mass influx of tourism happening at the time. And so when we had like a wonderful dinner at an izakaya and then went and grabbed drinks, and it was our first night in Kyushu, and we thought, we have to go do something. And so we have to go hang out. And Maxwell Lear from MTC was also with us on this trip. And we decided, oh, let's find like a bar where we can just drink shochu. And we find this tiny little karaoke bar. And Maxwell and I are just like, hey, can we go inside? And they're like, No. No foreigners, nor tourists. Like, wow. This is specifically for
a local establishment.
And then Haru saves the day and comes in and says his magic words. I don't know what you said, but we were able to get
like,
in.
I just asked him. It's like, oh, we just want to sing a couple songs. And
yeah, I was like, oh, okay. We found out it was a karaoke bar.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay.
Wow.
So we
3,000 yen, yeah, we were able to just like sit down.
We drank like a ball and a half and drink.
Wow.
So it was quite the experience, that's for sure.
Mm.
I think understanding like where it's being grown in was actually like one of the highlights for me. And like understanding the cuisine, the people, the culture that goes behind each ball of shochu.
Yeah, seeing the landscape was amazing too. Just seeing where it was grown.
Like next time I go have like yakiniku or like anything grilled like yakitori, I'm going to have some shochu. Because it's like, that's like the pairing in my mind now.
Cool. Yeah. And then the Kyushu people are really like, you know, laid back.
They're super chill.
Most down to earth people, I think. And then we went back to Tokyo afterwards and it's like, it's so different.
Yeah, like, right? Oh.
It's like no one's drinking shochu here.
Everyone's drinking sake.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, even in New York. So, but it just reminded me of that, my trip to, you know, the Kumamoto. Mm-hmm. And it happened to be, that was once a month, I think, there is a, what's called the Shochu Daigaku, Shochu University, which is a gathering of shochu makers, local.
Oh, wow.
And I happened to be there. Someone took me to there. Like, amazing, good, and energized vibe, very positive, and younger, you know, generation. So.
Well, that's what we also noticed was, like, the generation that's currently making shochu are, like, very young.
They're very, very young.
It's, like, 20s like and 30s. 20s,
yeah. Wow.
So it's, like, very young people. And
they're like, excited to like
they're super
stuff.
They're super hungry and like super creative with what they're doing, and they're willing to experiment. And so it's like you might find an atypical shochu, but you know it's gonna taste great.
Yeah, if you could get yourself over there to visit the Shuzos, and you'll be so surprised.
We tasted like 20 already that are located here for the competition. Mm-hmm. So there is still quite a portfolio of shochus now, and I think right now like. The climate is perfect, especially for New York. Like people are drinking low ABV. People want things that are more flavorful rather than alcohol high.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the global trend, I think.
I think it's global as well. And also like people are a fan of like Japanese whiskeys as well.
Mm.
So like right now, you know, don't think of like shochu as just like a cheaper alternative to Japanese whiskey. But it's like, you might find something that's like
you'll
super interesting.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. Mm. Just point at a bottle and say, I'll have that on the rock or like any sort of way.
Yeah. Interesting that, you know, all those traditional industries, like including sake industry, tend to be, you know, trying to find new labor, especially younger generation. Mm-hmm. But shochu business seems very,
old school.
Yeah, but school, the going.
But there's still a younger generation that's like picking up the mantle because like what they do.
They really want to run with it and see where it takes them too. And so I think that's really exciting.
Right. So they're going to create, you think they're going to create new products appealing the overseas market?
We were actually shown like new products when
we
showed
new products. Exactly. Broken Home 10 even got like a copper still and they were about to start distilling vodka and
making it into whiskey potentially.
Yeah. Wow.
Yanagita has like, so he has two versions of shochus, one for the American market, the other for the Italian market. Sanwa Shurui is making a botanical infused shochu. So it's not gin. that was like the one thing they wanted to clarify on us. But it's like infused with like local botanicals like mikan or botang. So like all these like super cool like products. But like they can do it because they're a much bigger industry, and they're actually trying to tap into the bar scenes as well. So I think, I think like the innovation that's happening is like amazing. Like, I've never seen
that. The future's bright for sure.
Well, absolutely.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm so glad to hear that. So, all right. So, I'm sure the listeners want to know your updates or whatever. So. Where can we find you online?
So You can find me on Instagram at mixberries, M-I-X-D-B-E-R-R-I-E-S. Usually posting things like cocktails or sake. And yeah, I'll be at Masa or Bar Masa Tuesdays through Saturdays usually. So cool. Come on by.
Yeah, and you could find me at Andy Con Leche, A-N-D-Y-C-O-N-L-E-C-H-E. And I'll be at the Hidden Pearl, and we're actually doing like a Honkaku Shochu night in January to launch Tuesdays, because we're only open Wednesday through Monday right now. So that'll be really exciting, because Maxwell and I will be just having a night, talking shop, sharing stories, right. Doing a bunch of other different shochu cocktails that I think could be really fun, that I've just been playing around with since coming back. So that'll be January 14th, 2020, at the Hidden Pearl.
Exciting. Okay, so good luck and keep me posted. Maybe you guys can come back and talk more. Back.
Oh, and I believe they are going to do another Spirited Away for 2020.
Oh, cool.
Don't know about the theme yet, but do follow them on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's a Spirited Away cocktail competition, not the movie.
Yeah, but it's based on the movie, right? The Miyazaki movie.
The Kamikaze, But they'll announce themes and such in January, and competition should follow after that. So.
Right. Awesome. Okay. So Andy, Hal, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or kyukatema.com. Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on the Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Matt Patterson, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week. Japan Needs is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.
Hey listeners, we're nearing the end of our 15th anniversary fundraising campaign, and we need your help to meet our goal. This campaign offers you a chance to win a unique food and music experience in one of the most exciting cities in America. Here's how it works. Donate to HRN and you'll be entered to win dinner for two and two tickets to a concert in one of eight amazing cities: New York, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Nashville, Las Vegas, Charleston, Ardmore, Pennsylvania, and Asheville. All donations support our work educating food system storytellers. And when you donate, you can choose one of those cities and you'll be entered to win dinner and two tickets to a show. So help us reach our goal and enter to win dinner and a show in the city of your choice. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15. Thank you.